Friday's Daily DVR does our true detecting. It's sponsored, of course, by our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com. All month long, and you only got, 2 days left, use code FOOTBALL30 and get 30% off NFL and NCAA football merchandise, baby. That's right, at Cufflinks.com. And you know what? Go to Cufflinks.com every day because they always have fantastic codes that you can use to save on their amazing products. Come on, spruce yourself up. Look good when you step outside. Cufflinks.com/DVR. You can also use our code, DVR20, get you 20% off your order, regardless of price. So go on over to Cufflinks.com before it's too late. Football 30. Get that Patriots pin so you can wear it and be sad when they lose. Sorry, I'm a Jets fan. Let's get on with the show. Today is Wednesday, January 30th, 2019, and this is Daily DVR Does True Detecting. Welcome back, everybody. It's me, Mr. DJ Axel Foley, and I'm here with DJ Heath Solo. How you doing, DJ Heath Solo?
Twitch, 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 twitch. Doing well, brother. Doing well. Ready to dive into some true detectives.
Yeah. So remember, follow us on the Twitter, DVR Podcast. Also email us at dvrpodcast@gmail.com because we do have some feedback tonight. Also remember to check out DVR Podcast, the website. Yeah, baby. Today we're going to be talking about True Detective Season 3, Episode 4, The Hour in the Day. I do a show called Daily DVR every single day. You can subscribe to that and find out more on the website. But this episode was written by Nick Pizzolatto, our showrunner, and David Milch. Oh, yeah, baby, that's right, the David Milch. And it was directed by Pizzolatto. So this episode, to me, was deep. It was a little slow. It maybe didn't have as much it didn't grab you as much as some moments in the first three did, but I love this episode. What did you think, Solo?
My first impressions, I wasn't super in love with the episode, but then as I thought about it and in the whole grand scheme of things, it was very well done, and there was a lot that needed to be said and to move the story along. But I guess I was on my seat like, let's get to it already. Let's go. And I think in the back of my head, I was expecting the episode 4 crazy one-take shootout of some sort. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
And so I think in my mind, I'm like, come on, we have 10 minutes left. What's going on? Because I thought, you know, it was an extra longer episode.
Oh, and I didn't, okay.
Because it was like an hour and 10 minutes, like at least on the DVR, my DVR. So I was expecting the extended, so I was geared up for that. So I think that's part of why at first I wasn't as into it.
Interesting.
But yeah, so I don't know. I love this show. It was great TV. I just honestly, I'm getting a little bored with Hayes and Amelia's, like their first date. Like, I know that was a great scene, and I'm just like, I don't know. I guess because we're getting three timelines and we kind of know a lot of stuff that's happened, but yet we don't. Maybe I think I know more than I do.
Yeah.
And I'm just getting a little, and then fighting at home. I don't know. I'm getting a little bored with their relationship, and I don't know why.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting, man. I had the opposite reaction. I found their first date to be so fun and just had this tension and energy, and the acting was amazing. The way Mahershala Ali is able to kind of switch from this stoic guy who you think would never crack a joke to then say penis holster was hilarious to me. I said penis holster. Did you hear me say that, Heath Solo? I said penis holster. Okay, good. All right, I was waiting for
that. I love my salad.
But I was drawn into it. And the fight, and when they had their fight, and she said, "What are you going to do?" And he said, "I'm going to cry. I'm going to be hurt. I don't think we're ever going to get along, and I love you, and I want to get along with you. oh, that was so affecting to me. And we had been talking about a bit last week about masculinity. And this episode had touched upon that too, because so much of his relationship with her is him later feeling, you know, like demasculinized, emasculated, right? Feeling like she solved the case. She wrote the book. She, you know, like when he announced, I'm back on the case. And she was like, oh, I'm supposed to be happy about it like you were the other night for me. And which she had a great point. She is, I think, always in their relationship, there's this status difference. She sees him as kind of simple, you know, the soldier, the cop. She's an artist, a teacher, a writer, you know, something deeper. But he has that deepness. He just doesn't know how to express it. And he feels smothered by her. But it's not her fault, because she's saying to him, well, all you had to do was stand up. So I, you're right that for the overall theme of the show, True Detective, there's not much detective there. It's a relationship. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
they didn't tie it into it too much yet, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the part of me why I got bored with their relationship this episode is and I think it's because they're doing a great thing with the three timelines, but because of that, because we know the relationship goes down south, we know why. So why do I need to see the first date
south? It probably did go down south, but I think the
correct term would be it goes south. A few times. Well, it did this episode. Yeah. but it just it to me. I just think, all right, enough. Why I'm enough already is because we know a lot what happens. I think there's more interesting stuff, but yet if it was going chronologically, it would have been different. If this took place after when they were walking, you know, looking for the girl in the field and talking.
I think
that's why, to me, I felt like we've been here already, and I guess we haven't. But because the show has done such a great job at – getting us prepared, I felt like I saw this already. And I think that's why I was a little bored, even though we haven't.
You make a good point. You make a good point,
Solo. You know what I mean?
And you know what? You know what I think you make a good point about is perhaps there's a little bit of not trusting that we understand the depth here and a need to show it. But I guess the writing was so good, and let's again remember that this is written by Milch, who is the man, Deadwood. And this was – I think HBO had him – I heard that HBO brought him in. It's interesting. When they did this, they first brought in they said that, you know, Pizzolatto was coming back. And then they made the announcement that they were bringing in the director of the first two episodes, who is now I'm going to lose my
Fukunaga?
No, that was from the that was from the first season. But anyway, it'll come back to me, man. I'm tired. I'm sorry, but
it's okay.
They brought him in and they said, okay, we're going to have Pizzolatto with a director for this whole season. That was what was supposed to happen. But then he went off and directed a movie for Netflix. Okay.
That's right.
So then they said, okay, we're going to bring in David Milch as a writer. And he's going to write this season with him. And then Milch only ended up doing like, I think, two or three episodes. And then it ended up that Milch went off and did the Deadwood movie for HBO. So I feel like HBO was actually tricking everyone. And they knew Pizzolatto could do this by himself. And he was going to do this. And he was going to show run it. And they kind of brought in these guys to kind of like bolster him along a little bit of the way. And also almost to get Milch back into fighting shape for the Deadwood season, right? So, Jeremy Saulnier, who I loved, directed Green Room. He was originally going to direct the whole season. I think it's interesting, but I agree. I see what you're saying there, Solo, which is that this episode did – we wanted – I kind of – I don't know. I was feeling the vibes of the freaky, mysterious, spiritual, kind of mystic physics vibes they were laying down last episode, and they really didn't do that this episode. This episode was very raw and human. And I appreciate it, but I do agree with you that what's going on with him and his wife, and we actually do have a little bit of feedback there that I wanted to bring up. First of all, Bill Cava corrects us and says, Will is the kid of Tom and Lucy, the boy who died. They got married because she got pregnant 3 months. But Julie, the daughter who was kidnapped and we see later in 1990, is still alive, right? He sees her on the video footage this episode. Julie was conceived while Tom was away working in Texas. And Julie's, and Bill ponders, or he posits, that Julie's father is someone from Hoyt Foods, like I said. I thought that was something to do with that big factory, right? Because in True Detective, it's always about the system. But we didn't see any of that this episode. We didn't learn about any of that this episode, which was, I can see, was a little disturbing, not disturbing, just, it didn't keep me going, you know? I was into the emotions, but it didn't keep me going in the vein of the kind of mystery vibe.
Yeah, I felt like I got hit with a bullet with rock salt and then just kind of awoke. I think – and that's what happened to me. Like I wanted the mystery – you know, we got some things like we found out. Like, you know, I mean, believe me, the scenes were, like, great. Like, the acting and the writing and everything works. That's not the problem I have with it. I just wanted more to move forward with the mystery. Like, when we saw Scoop McNairy being held in the back of the bar, he thinks the bar owner
is
–
we learned about
wife.
How – that filled in a gap of why he
– Yes.
Yeah, knew –
Roland West helped him out for the first time. And so like stuff like that, that was like, oh, okay, we saw that now. And just this thing with the guy with the lazy eye, you know, that scene was intense. And that to me, I was like shaking. I'm like, oh my gosh. But like now are they looking for someone else with a lazy eye? Like I got confused. Like
this episode did do a little bit of the, okay, so they go the alms, the little creatures, right? Not the creatures, the dolls or whatever they are, right? Lead them to the church, right? The priest leads them to the doll lady. The doll lady leads them to the guy with one eye. It is a little bit of
– Yeah, not a lazy eye.
Yeah, it got a little
not bit – Not a lazy eye, but weird eye.
Yeah, weird eye. Sorry. I think they called it like dead eye.
They did do a little bit of the
noir this episode, right? That's the noir trope that you're always like, how did they get here? You know, right? Mm-hmm. Like they went to like, you know, like when Fletch goes to this guy's house and then he robs something and he sees a picture and then he has to go to the restaurant because the guy he saw remembered the picture in the restaurant. You know, it's like, so I agree with you that it was a little windy this episode. But I wanted to say some feedback here from Gina because I thought this was interesting and I want to see what you think about this point. And maybe it has – because it has something to do with the relationship here. Gina says, I do think that the wife somehow played a role in the crime. Also, since we don't know yet what happened with the girl, maybe that gun he has is to kill himself. But what if it's also a piece of evidence that he's been holding on to all these years and doesn't realize what it is? So maybe the wife is connected in that way too. Maybe we'll learn these dynamics that we see in their relationship played out in how the case played out. And it may make us later in later episodes solo say, ah, Gina, do you think the wife had something to do with it? She is so calm and collected and like.
I know that's a popular theory going around, like she's involved somehow. That would really be a twist because I'm off that beaten path with that, but that would be amazing. Plus, she did mention how, I guess, before she was a little crazy in her younger years and who knows what she was involved in. And I still think that the white dude that picked her up after the town meeting has something to do with it. I'm telling you. It would be kind of crazy. But there's something to do with the book, and they relate. You know what? Gina's right, too. And I think that's one reason why we did get this episode where when the season's finished and I go back and like rewatch it, I'm sure it's going to be one of those. Oh my God, look at these clues. Look at this. And I know that. That's why I can't say the episode was great. It just, for me, I was a little lost and was a little not bored, because bored's the wrong word because it's so good. I just wanted something different this episode. Having said that.
Yeah. Well,
man, there's a lot of this could be tied to why their relationship went south and all this. Yeah,
the daughter, because we. But you're right, dude. There's so many things we didn't learn anything new, and we got cut. We learned new things about people's dynamics, right? Mm-hmm. Emotional relationship dynamics, but we didn't really learn that much more about the case. Besides the fact that they actually saw the daughter on the surveillance tape, that was one thing we kind of learned, right? Gina also points out, I'm sorry. I just want to point out that Gina just wanted, because I thought this was fun for Westworld. The actress that plays his wife is actually is the ex-wife of Bernarnold or Jeffrey, what's his name? Jeffrey Wright from Westworld. Her name is Carmen Ejiago.
Yeah, she does have actually even Tessa Thompson. She has some Tessa Thompson in her, or vice versa. They both kind of have some similarities, which is interesting as well.
She's actually English.
I was watching her. Huh. Yeah. Interesting.
Yep. All right. Little mid-ad break here. True Detective having fun talking with Heath. And you know what? Head over on to cufflinks.com/DVR, baby. This week, we're still doing our Super Bowl picks. We got a couple days. It's Wednesday. You got, 5 days to the Super Bowl. Who do you think's going to win? Go over there, choose who you think, and you could win a pair of cufflinks.com Millennium Falcon cufflinks. They're so awesome. And go over to Cufflinks and just check them out. While you're there, look at what else they got. Last week, I read this list that DJ Tim Hines gave me. They have like little DJ cufflinks. They got coffee cup cufflinks. They've got everything over there. And not just cufflinks. And it doesn't just have to be a kind of like an item, like a niche item. They have the regular stuff like the ox and the bull, which is going to be going on sale pretty soon. They have fantastic stuff. So enhance your look. Look good when you step outside. Be like me. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR. Now back to the show. So I want to jump over here because I did want to read you a bit of Andy Nick's email because he made some very good kind of predictions. Now, we read this on last Friday's show with Justin, so I won't read the whole thing. But basically, he's been kind of trying to see if this season three will follow the same formula as season one and two. And after season four, after episode four of the first two seasons, Andy asks, will the detectives make an arrest or seem to find the killer? In season one and two, there was a false climax where it seemed like they solved the case. And I think we're seeing that here with being able to blame it on the trash can man with this. And also he follows up, will there be a firefight? Both previous seasons have had a deadly firefight to mark the halfway point. And he was absolutely right. They ended it with the beginning of the firefight. So Andy Nick is on the case, baby.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we already found out in like what the first episode that the wrong person's probably in prison.
Yep,
so
yep.
It's a little different. It's a little different than finding an arrest. Now we're just wondering who that person is.
But that's still a false climax, except you're right. They spinned it this time. I mentioned that too on Friday, that this time they let us know from the beginning that it wasn't right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess it has the same thing, but they're just doing it in a different way. And then it looks like, I'm assuming the beginning of episode 5 might be the fight versus the end of 4 that it has been the last 2 seasons. So they're changing it up a bit, but we're still getting the same elements, right?
Yes, true. And that's what he's kind of discussing.
Yeah.
He says for episode, going into episode 5 now, will the first timeline be over? In both previous seasons, episode 5 started years after the events of episode 4. We're seeing into multiple timelines now, but I wonder, will the 1980s story conclude? Will we take a major time jump, or will Wayne's screwed up memory let us keep learning about the beginning of the case?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. This still seems like there's more to be told with the 80s, but maybe not. Maybe it could be right. Maybe that's one of the reasons what we got the first date this past episode and it, all that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Oh, go ahead.
So
buddy.
Maybe. Yeah, no. I'm just saying maybe the fight, and we're going to find out who gets imprisoned and all that, and then maybe it'll end. Yeah, maybe. Because remember, didn't you predict there would be like an all 90s episode?
Yes, I did.
And I hope we do get that. I think they should do that. I would hope they do that.
I think that
– that would be great.
I think that Andy's onto something here, because I do think that they can dispense with a portion of the 80s if we see the firefight happen. It ends with them basically, you know, pinning it and quickly – going to trial and pinning everything on the Indian guy and saying that he killed the girl, right? And then also we get to see how Roland got his limp, because it looks like that happened maybe with this explosion or something, or this firefight, right? And then we kind of – maybe we even jump to a different time, because there is, again – something I was thinking about is like, you know, there's a long period of time between 80 and 90, but also between 90 and 2015.
Right.
You know,
right.
So we could see other time periods. We don't have to be stuck in these 3 time periods. Maybe we'll leave 1980, but we'll move further into the 80s. You know, I don't think they'll ever meet.
Oh, that's a great – that would be cool.
You know, and then maybe see her write the book. And you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like stuff like that. So,
yeah, because why are we so, – yeah, because it's funny because they've done the 3 timelines and we just assume we're going to see the 3 timelines.
Right.
But why not 87,
exactly.
94,
yep.
2006? I mean, who knows? Yeah, that might be when Andy had mentioned how the time jump and stuff, we may get that the second half where – oh, that's a great point.
All right.
I like that. I
got something from Bill. Hi, Axel and Heath. I'm more interested in the mystery. This is Bill Cava, our man in Jersey. I'm more interested in the mystery of why everyone is so pissed at Hayes more than I am about the kids. I think Will died by accident and Julie ended up with a real father's family after the incident. But the real story, I think, is what did Hayes do between the AG Lost Goodwin dude and the trooper's total disdain for him in 90? The relationship with his wife, even the way his son looks at him at the current day, and we find out that his son's a cop this episode. We didn't know that previously, right?
Right, we didn't.
Okay.
At all.
He must have really effed up. Looking forward to that reveal unfolding. Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know. I feel more Bill. I feel it's less like he effed up and more like he just allowed something to happen that brought shame upon him and his family. You know?
You know, I agree with you there. I'm beginning to – because I don't think it's something where he could go to jail for anything like
that. I think
that,
he just went along with the frame-up.
Yeah. You know what? Because maybe, you know, the Indian guy – maybe he shoots
– a cop or something.
Roland West.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You know,
there you go.
Or something happens and then, you know, he's basically got a mob and everyone saying he did it, and maybe he prevents them from killing him, but he goes along with the arrest. I mean, who knows? But yeah, that's what I'm leaning with you, Axel, that it's more like he didn't do something versus he did something bad.
Yep, definitely.
But he's kept it in, you know. So and hence why Roland West maybe wants him in the night. Maybe it's not what I think, where you keep your enemies close or whatever, blah, blah, blah. It's, oh, you had my back even then, even though we haven't talked. I know you'll have my back now. And does he? Mm. You know, maybe that's another dynamic.
Ah, yes. Because there is, you're absolutely right, that's a great thematic dynamic between them, Solo, because you had the whole incident. We had the talks that they've been having about race, and the way that it's being framed, even when Roland is in the car with Tom Purcell, and Purcell drops the N-word, and then he feels horrible about it, and he says, "Don't tell him," and you're not sure whether he's saying, "Don't tell him because he really feels horrible," or "Don't tell him because I want him to investigate the case good." You know, like, but you have those kind of two white guys together. And then the response from Roland West is he's been called a lot worse than that. Like, he knows he completely sees Wayne as Wayne, you know? And in some ways that blocks him from seeing the reality of racial relations throughout these decades. But in another way, it provides him an insight into Wayne, you know? And I think that dynamic where Wayne kind of, you know, where they had the whole crowd going after him, which was obviously there was a racial tension there, you know, and the way the guy kind of used it, called him a peckerwood and everything, right? That used it to his advantage. And then the way that Wayne felt, it was another way of Wayne being othered, right? Like, he's a cop, but he's black, but he, the guy even said, "How do you even wear that badge?" And he said, "I have a tiny little hook on it." You know, for Roland to kind of, in a way, push Wayne into the frame up, or even reverse, even for Wayne to push Roland into the frame up, you know, like, I think would be very interesting, and it would play into the dynamics we've seen so far about the characters and his wife too. Let's see. Right. We have an interesting email from Brett. And this was, I thought, was really cool. There is definitely a relationship between the director, Elisa, and Wayne's son, Henry. In episode 3, they addressed each other by first names quietly when Henry tried to end the session. They seemed very friendly. In this episode, in the police station lobby, Henry paused when Wayne asked him if he'd seen her lately. Then to top it off, there were two wine glasses in the hotel room. It makes me think that Elisa seduced Henry in order to get to Wayne. And feeling certain that certain questions answered will be the final step to fulfill her ambition and become the one that solves the case. Interesting. So it's happening the same way with Wayne and his wife and Elisa and his son, where the woman is kind of using him to solve the case, you know, to get famous or whatever. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. In the process, I believe she will turn the table on Henry and Wayne. Early in the episode, Amelia accentuated the word vicissitudes. She told me to look it up, so I did. It means a change of circumstance or fortune, typically one that is unwelcome or unpleasant. I believe this is what Elisa will ultimately prove for Wayne. Wayne is blocking something from his memory, something that carries guilt. Standing outside the church in 1980, the priest told him more than once that he'd like to hear his confession. Wayne has something to confess, but what? I noticed that too, Brett. He said it like 4 times. He said it twice in the beginning, then he said it twice when they were standing out there. I'd really like to hear your confession.
I know, and I think he just said it just now. Yeah, so that's 5 now.
I know, that's 5. Yeah. Could Wayne be a knowing or unknowing accomplice to the crime? Alisa referred to eyewitnesses seeing a black man with a facial scar walking around the area, and the farmer said he saw a black man and a white woman in a brown sedan. The doll maker said she sold dolls to a black man with a dead eye. Perhaps Wayne, as an unreliable narrator, tweaked this fact in his mind because subconsciously he knows he had a war scar on his face back then. Could he have been the one to leave the dolls in the woods? Did he leave anything else there? What do you think, Solo?
Oh, wow. That's pretty heavy. And I like it just because it's outside the box and something I didn't even think about. Now, going back, the first thing I saw when I saw the two wine glasses, I'm like, oh, Wayne's son is sleeping with the documentary host.
Yeah.
To, you know, that to me, that's what I immediately thought. The unreliable narrator stuff, man, that stuff scares me because that could be. I mean, they kind of mentioned certain things. I don't know if he's the killer. It would be amazing if him and Amelia actually were involved. That would be so messed up, though. Oh, man, but that would just be. Imagine that. Oh, boy.
I think that's more about what happened with the case than them being the killers. That's what I think.
Right. I think I'm with you on that.
Or something happened in 1990 that we haven't seen yet. And they did do that. They're guilty of that. That's possible that they somehow interceded with the case illegally. Maybe even to right a wrong. Now, Brett brings up the cousin, right? They found out that the cousin was dead, right?
Yep, in the rock quarry.
Yep. So the priest remembers Julie talking about going to see an aunt. Perhaps aunt is a term she called the friend of her uncle, who could be the woman from the brown sedan. Wow. If Dan was associated with a ring that helped plot the kidnapping of Julie and the murder of Will was collateral damage, I could imagine him placing Will in the communion pose that he was found in. Maybe Will's the father. Furthermore, if he was associated with a dangerous ring, because they still haven't gotten too much. They only mentioned that once, though. He could be found himself the victim of murder for being sloppy and getting arrested. Brett is going deep.
Yeah, Brett.
Brett also says, I like this theory, and that the person who was arrested for the murder of Will is the high schooler who pushed him off his bike. We know the prosecutor was pushing for a hasty resolution, and when Wayne said, when that kid's 25, he's going to be in jail, but not for this, it could prove ironic. That's true. Maybe the trash can man just ends up getting killed. And they pin it on the kid.
Oh, that's a possibility.
And then you have that racial stuff going on there too, because maybe Wayne was like, so this time a white kid goes to jail. Most of the time it's a black kid. Maybe he has that attitude and that disturbs Stephen Dorff.
Roland West.
I'm sorry. I got to get the names down. But we're almost halfway through. Okay. I got to get the names down. But yeah, maybe that disturbs West. That's interesting. That's great stuff. Thank you, Brett. I don't know.
A lot to chew on here.
We're learning little bits, but we're not learning enough. And I feel like I agree with you in the sense that the next episode, Solo, they got to do a dump. They've got to get us more involved in the case, in the mysteries, in the greater. They've done a lot of hinting at things, and this needs to open up.
Yeah, if I see another date with Amelia and Wayne, I'm out.
Yeah, even though, man, she is so sexy, Solo. She's just calm and like.
But I'm not in it for the sex.
Oh, well, okay.
I'm in it for the Sorry, did I say that a lot?
Well, like, look, last episode you ended up by asking me to go back to the hotel, but I guess that's not going to happen this episode. Yeah. So, guess things have changed. It's all right. I understand. A week has gone by. Lady Solo is she's there, you know, tempting you.
I gave my 10 seconds already. Sorry, yep, this week.
That's right. Well, that's why I knew it was 15. See? Don't tell Lady Solo. I knew that.
I will.
Well, let's see. There's just a couple. I want to wrap it up, but I just wanted to throw a couple thoughts at you. Going into the whole racial and political thing, there's a picture of Roland with Bill Clinton on his wall in 1990. There's also a picture of a girl on his desk, and that's the same girl he sees in the church in 1980. When he goes up and talks to her. First we see it, we're in Roland's office. I like when he says, God is love, brother.
God is love, brother.
The liquor store scene was kind of interesting. I like their little discussion when he said, let's go to the liquor store. And then it was like, why? You think a black man's going to be at a liquor store? And it was like, it's one of three businesses in the town, and most people go there. See, they're playing into that a lot, that really throughout this show, four episodes in, Wayne has made way more racial comments than Roland has. You know, even to the point where Roland said, remember, he said, if it was a black man, I'd hesitate even more. You know, he's woke, you know, and I think that has to play into what happens here. That has to be a part of it, because that's a big theme that's going on in the show. All right, Solo. Well, we've reached the end here. This has been a great. I've always loved podcasting with you, brother. We're getting down. We're detecting. Hoping next episode is a little more catching the fancy. Is there any final thoughts you have?
No, just I'm excited for the next episode. The season's been great. Like I said, this past episode, it's not that I didn't like it. I was expecting something else, some more information, but. You know what, in the grand scheme of things, I trust this show and I have a good feeling, the next four episodes are going to be really, really, really well done. So I'm just looking forward to it.
Yes. And I want to thank Gina, Brett, Bill, Andy, Nick. And also, again, we had a good email from DJ Tim Hines, but it was more about watching the show and enjoying it and not trying to figure out who the murderer was this time, and just his appreciation of the show. So maybe we'll share that at another time, that we do appreciate that, DJ. Don't mean to slight you, but you know,
DJ this week's like the Matt Damon on Jimmy Kimmel.
If I have to slight someone, it's got to be the VIP DJ. You know what I mean? He's always in the VIP room anyway. So we got to let the people speak. You know, he has his soapbox. He's got DJ's soapbox. Maybe he'll do an episode.
He can
this
do it
week.
At any time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. We need a True Detective DJ.
Mm-hmm. Inside DJ's True Detective, baby.
Oh, I like that.
I like it. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Remember, find us at DVR Podcast. You can also subscribe to Daily DVR and listen to me every day. We have a Patreon. You can become a patron. You're going to get tons of early stuff. Like we did an NFL pod, and I'm going to drop that early for the patrons since it's already recorded. They'll get the Friday show early, and they'll get a lot of stuff like the film list. And we're going to bring back a lot of stuff like Lost Mythos and all that stuff. But for now, thank you for listening. And thank you for reviews. Bill Cava, AU Pack Mule, and a couple other people that I want to thank very much. I can't get to my phone right now, but there was M Newhouse as well. And me too. My review was excellent show. And what I said was, I love Heath. You can look it up right now on the podcast. That was my review of the show. I love Heath.
God is love, brother.
Yeah, baby. All right. Peace out, everybody.